Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Stephen Lucan and Tony Payne. Good to see you guys.
It's great to be with you.
I always like to say hello before we get into it. The topic today is multi-generational wealth planning and family communication. We're big on communication here. I hear it a lot when you're in staff meetings and talking to each other in reviews, family communication. This is a particularly interesting topic because I think everybody's touched by it. You know, if you're talking about money and family, especially if you've got a large family, that can be really tricky, and the communication is critical. So I want to get your tips and tricks to how to start this based on your experience when you have somebody sitting in front of you. We all know kind of money brings out the worst in people. So when you have somebody sitting in front of you and there's a big mass of wealth, how do you start the conversation or encourage people to talk, especially if they're not talkers?
It always starts with, what are your goals? And generally, it reflects on, where did they come from? How did they acquire the wealth? Mm-hmm. Was it inherited or was it earned? Did they come out with student loans, broke, had no money, and built it all themselves with their spouse, partner, whatever? So it really comes down to what their goals are and what their expectations are. And that usually sets the foundation on how they want to proceed moving forward with the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the phrase would be generational wealth. So the idea starts with, it's got to last beyond your generation. So in having that discussion, someone across the table who's worried about grandchildren or three generations away, I would suggest that's on the premise that you already have enough for yourself. So that's the first starting point, I think. You've got to have your foundation set up, be able to take care of yourself. No, and that's part of working with a planner and knowing, I do have enough for me, for my goals, for my family. If something turned, I could have someone come in the house, help us out, not be a burden on the children. If you can't answer all of those confidently, we could do that. Well, then I would probably go back to, let's make sure your plan is shored up. Let's make sure that if life turned for you, you're okay. Mm-hmm. Because just like a first responder, if you put yourself in trouble, you're no good to anybody else. So you've got to have your plan in order too. Mm-hmm. So that'd be the start. And if we're beyond that, then we'll continue past there.
Yeah.
What is the next phase then? I mean, is it better to give money in life or, you know, after you're gone? I mean, that's obviously subjective, I would assume. But how do you – I'm not a CFP, so I'm sitting here trying to imagine what these conversations look like.
Yeah, well, where we're fortunate enough is we've worked with people long enough that we learn who they are as people, how they're wired. So you start to get a feel on, okay, this is the direction they're going to be going, because you hear the stories, how they acquire their wealth and so forth. And I like to joke, and somebody said, oh, give with a warm hand versus a cold hand, right? And that's where you want to give it, see the rewards of it by giving it while you are alive versus through your estate after you pass. So that a lot of times that comes into play. Mm-hmm. The hard part is, how will the benefactor respond to receiving sums of money? Mm-hmm. Are they going to treat it the
I
same?
I love that. That's actually at the crux of this.
Well, are they going to treat it the same way? Are they going to treat it the same way you perceive?
Right.
If I gave you $10,000, what would you do with it? Right. Yeah. That's really what it comes down to.
Because there are some people who start very large companies and they go away and their next generation just blows it all.
Well, yeah, they had somebody tell me one time, first generation earns it, second generation builds it and grows it, and the third generation blows it. Because mm-hmm. you lose the inspiration on the value of a dollar.
And that eventually used to be true.
Yeah.
That's not the stats now. Mm-hmm. So to go there, the methods we're going to talk through today, hopefully, and give some good advice are, mm-hmm. with that warm hand, it didn't say you have to add extra zeros on that. Mm-hmm. So the idea of starting smaller, if you're in that position, mm-hmm. that you know you have enough and you're going to start that strategy, maybe it's $1,000 at Christmas early on, or $5,000. Maybe it's not even for them to buy their present, but here's $1,000 or $5,000 for you to direct to charity. You know, we're going to give it, but you guys pick out this first charity or favorite. You're going to start to see, to your point, Stephen, you lose control when you've made that gift. So the idea of Can I condition them? Can I learn? Well, if I started small and over 20 years or so, they've gotten in this pattern of responsible giving and stewardship, well, then it's going to be a lot easier to say, let me give you this gift with a couple more zeros on it. So I think it really starts early on with have your plan, have your goals. And if we know we have enough, incorporate the children early.
And yeah. You're talking about aligning family goals too.
Yep, yeah, definitely.
In that aspect,
part of this multi-generational wealth is having an impact beyond the family. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, part of that discussion. Yeah. Is it just, hey, we're here for our kids and our family and give them the ability to do what they want? Or we were blessed here. We have enough. We've done this great thing. We want them to continue doing this good stuff that our family name is responsible for. Yes, you get this trust or this thing in your name, but our name carries responsibility with it. And that's sometimes that earlier on discussion that you can have rather than, oh, by the way, we changed the trust to you for Medicare, Medicaid reasons. That's so hollow. That's where we see a lot of trouble come in.
And I would imagine it gets really difficult. You guys are kind of Shaw people, advisors, marriage counselors, so I would imagine having a couple in front of you who have five kids who have amassed a good bit of wealth. It can be tricky to encourage
scary
them
too.
To talk
but no,
to their
it's
kids.
Scary, right? It's scary. They don't want the kids and maybe don't want the kids to know. Some do want the kids to know.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to balance between here's the financial conversation versus the family conversation, right? The personal conversation where do the kids have strong work ethics? Do they appreciate what a dollar is? Or is it easy come, easy go and they just squander it? Why not then just give it to charity? Mm-hmm. And you've seen all kinds of situations, those conversations.
Right. And I think in a well done way, you could say, go back to our last show almost talking about college and the path for kids. Is it for them to have fun or be happy? Or is it an investment and make money in the world and make a difference? Well, if you go back to that with this wealth and the multi-generational wealth piece, I think it really goes back to why are we doing this? You said it, Stephen, earlier, goals, but
I come from a generation where you don't talk about money. You
right.
don't ask about
it's
it. I was actually scolded for asking that. And that's a generational thing. So to understand what we make and where it goes, no matter what socioeconomic level you're sitting, does it make sense to have, when you're sitting down with your children, to have full transparency about what you have in place? Is that something that you would encourage?
It's personal. I would say no. I'm not 100%. That's how I am because, how I was brought up and so forth. You want to have some transparency, but not full transparency.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know you're struggling. You have challenges. You have to save for retirement. You have to save for the long term versus, you're gonna inherit a ton of money, so don't mm-hmm. worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's slippery slope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where the art comes in the discussions, because I agree with you.
Yeah.
And then the other side of someone has so much money, they're not going to spend it. They make their kid go out and take student loans. They make their kid go out and get a smaller home and their kids can't go to private school. And you've broken that generational trend of, hey, we're going to be better than the last generation because we needed to instill discipline, good old discipline. Well, if you can do that early on through other means, not through sacrifice financially, but no, you got to volunteer on Saturday. Mm-hmm. You got to be involved. Right. You got to do these things. So there's definite responsibility with it. It's not, oh, here's just this money. And to paint the picture here maybe a little better, you've got that person who wants to be a substitute teacher. They want to help children. They want to help special needs children. That's their calling in life. But we know the pay from that does not align with some lifestyles that child might have been raised in. So that transparency of a well-meaning child going, I can't afford to live like mom and dad if I do what I want to do. But with that transparency of, you can do that, you're doing all the right stuff, be that great teacher and enjoy life at our level. Well, with transparency, you can do that. And then maybe they're on a board of some great organization too, and you're seeing that they're getting fulfillment, they have somewhere to be and do, but without that relationship and communication, here's the money falling out of the sky, it goes bad.
Yeah. And they would have to build their own financial plan around that too, right? So you're not building one financial plan, you're building multiple financial plans. Which is critical.
Right. And that's where especially family offices, we hear that term a lot. And, for some advisors or financial planners, they might work with one family. You know, we work with hundreds, thankfully. We're here for maybe not that billionaire class yet, but the idea of we can be your family office if there's a couple generations there to be able to align exactly what you said.
Yeah.
You've built your wealth. You've got your plan. You want to see your kids carry that on. That's something we're able to help with and do, and with the right permissions. You know, when the privacy is there, great. And if someone said, you know, I want to have that child think about being a substitute teacher. I want them to do that. But I want them to have a plan. I want them to know what to do with this money. That's where incorporating your team can be great.
Yeah. And the other big challenge I often see is the grantors, the parents, generally, when they accumulate wealth, their perception on how to, and I'll use the word invest, how to invest that money changes. It gets too conservative, which is okay. You have enough. You don't need it. Where if you're somebody who's younger, you have a window of 40 years to invest. You could be a little bit more aggressive in a conservative aggressive, right? But it changes that dynamic of how you treat the money from an investment side too. Mm-hmm. So there's so many ways. It's an onion. You can just keep peeling it because there's so many ways the conversations can go.
If you use your rule of thumb that I'm certain age, I should have this in bonds, throw that out the window.
Yep.
Because like you're saying, if you have more than enough and maybe you're 105, you might be very aggressively invested because it's for the third generation down the line.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Don't you have to be sort of teaching in the stewardship of money, though, with your kids, your heirs? We'll say not kids, but necessarily heirs, period. Because it might not be a kid, might be a niece or somebody else. How do people avoid entitlement in those situations? Is it possible? I mean, once it's that's character based, I would think. So as you're dealing with people who might have an heir that you're kind of sniffing around and smelling that they've got their hand out and ready.
Yeah.
That's
not our decision.
Right.
That's again, what are the goals? Mm-hmm. And then that's where you bring in an estate attorney. Mm-hmm. You can bring in attorneys.
So suffocating logic.
Structure it to what do you want to have happen? Mm-hmm. Whether you're alive or dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could hide it all you want, but when you're that kid who I'm going to summer camp in a sailing place in the Bahamas and everybody else is kind of in Indiana, well, that's a tell maybe. Mm-hmm. So the idea that you're going to keep secret your Florida home, your other places, no, the kid's going to know the lifestyle that they've been living.
Right.
So again, back to that transparency reality side maybe, you know, the idea that mom and dad have boats and these wonderful cars and where did it all come from? If you're not sharing any of that early on and then they're just going to school for whatever they decided they wanted, you might be setting up for failure. But the earlier on that transparency of here's what we had to do to live this life, here's why you might be a little different, not better, but different economically, that's important. Mm-hmm. And that hopefully gets rid of some of the entitlement, but it's really hard. You know, you're getting dropped off in this car by this, you know, at this time at this school, you're going to feel a little different than a different car or a bus or something like that.
If your first car is a Maserati and not a Mustang II Ghia, 1975.
And that's where it starts, right?
Right?
So if you can get them that great car, maybe they're paying for tires or insurance. Maybe there's that compromise because you get those kind of cars, all of a sudden, oh, shoot, there's a real bill with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Should those family governance, those sort of structures be formal or informal? Is that something that – so do you recommend that a family seek an attorney structure –
Well, that's where a financial planner, right?
Not just the planning part of it, maybe.
Right, but then that's where the financial planner will say, okay, we need – for your situation, you need this kind of estate attorney – or an insurance agent, and a specific to your situation where you can maybe incorporate or create some trusts or security blankets, whatever the situation is, that's, yes, you need a good attorney, you need a good accountant. They all are important, and obviously a good financial planner. Mm-hmm.
If you think about maybe your fourth or fifth generation down the line and the family's been growing, there's typically one or two decision makers or trustees that are responsible for the family trust, and then they're communicating those decisions to the different beneficiaries at different levels even. So when you think about something like a family property, you know, who gets it July 4th, that ideal weekend on the beach when all the events are happening? Well, do we have a governance structure that says we can trade? Here's how we trade. Here's who gets it. Here's how when your turn comes. here's our share of the maintenance bill.
And have that
full governance agreement with an attorney. And I'm just picking one asset maybe, but the idea of it's family trust or other monies, it does get that complicated when you're doing it right, hopefully. But when you're doing it right, you're also savvy on the tax side. Somebody gets in that accident on July 4th, the whole family's not losing the property. You know, you've got to structure things the right way. And usually that's communication leads to that.
And that's pretty much a really good situation is the vacation home.
Yeah.
Right. The fan, because there's so much emotion there. The kids want to keep it, right? Parents say, okay, if the kids want to keep it, let's keep it. It does get tricky. That third generation is always the tricky point. Because if you have three kids, okay, 33% each, or two kids, 50% each, but then they have kids. Maybe one has three, the other has two, or one doesn't have kids. It gets very complicated. So that third generation is always the tricky point when it comes to sharing assets, family assets.
And especially if there's a lot, like you said, a lot of emotion about the property, but maybe there's not the liquidity there to fund it. So yes, we all love having the family beach house, but when that seawall needs to be redone and it's $200,000 and the house is in a trust and either we need to take a loan out or we need to come up with the money, well, if all those different heirs are in different financial circumstances, do we just sell this and split it up, or does someone pony up more and get more weeks? I mean, I'm using real examples here because this can be as complex, but the other side is the family just fights over it and everybody's miserable and you don't have this governance, you don't address it, then something bad happens and maybe you didn't even have the insurance paid up because it wasn't your responsibility. That's terrible.
Wow. Oof. How do you handle succession planning? Like if there's a business in the family, is that strictly, you know, an attorney and the CFP?
Well, you need an accountant, attorney, a financial planner, and again, talk about what
they
the
roles
need are. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Right. And again, it comes down to even if the kids are involved, right, are active in the business. Maybe the valuation of the business is part of one inheritance and an IRA is the other child. So you can split the estate, but
about that. So you know, you've got a you're a dentist, and your son works or your daughter works with the
practice.
The practice, and then there's three other kids that don't have any
association.
They're
not dentists.
That'd be tough.
Right,
and that's where again the succession planning idea too of. Well, I have this business. That's one thing. I've got to worry about our plan, this business, my employees, my patients. But then, well, what about these other kids too? Mm-hmm. That may be on the estate side of equalizing the estate. So now we're talking two different higher level concepts. You've got a succession plan, successfully the business. If you ever want to escape to that beach house and enjoy it yourself.
Yeah.
But then you've also may have to worry about, do we want to equalize this? Or, hey, I gave all four of these kids the opportunity to do this. The one did it. Why do I need to sacrifice for them? Why do they need to take loans to buy out their brothers and sisters who enjoyed 3 years in Cambodia or something? That's, you know.
And with the succession planning too is I always say try to make it a business transaction, not a family transaction, right? So that way it's hard numbers. Here are the requirements and it may require a loan, but it's a business. It should be treated. I have the opinion of treat it like a business transaction, not a family transaction, because then there's too much emotion.
Right. And the other side too, if you care about your employees and your clients, if that's important to you, you've got to account for them too in that. And again, maybe that's not for everybody, but be relevant.
And we have a lot of podcasts relative to all these topics, succession planning, estate planning, all the things that we're talking about today. I think that's a good place to stop.
Okay. All right. Good.
Thank you very much. We hope that you enjoyed the content. If you want to see more of it, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends.
Media, think big.